The following program is produced by the Tech Talk Radio Network.
Hey, what's up? This is Tom Arnold, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. They're really great, and I love them. Hey, how about a copy of Windows? Can I get a laptop?
Welcome to another episode of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
And I'm Justin Lemmy.
We are the show, in case you're just tuning in, that talks about computers,
technology,
and the internet, and sometimes things that don't work with technology.
Yeah, lots of those.
That get covered as well. Let me ask you, if you build your own systems, you don't go out and buy a rack system off the shelf.
Yeah, no. I haven't bought a desktop PC from a manufacturer since probably back in my early Navy days when I was in Japan. I didn't have the ability to build a computer, so I bought an HP.
Yeah.
But before that, it was a Gateway. That was the only two I've ever bought off the shelf. Everything else I've built.
I will honestly admit, at one point in my technological career, I bought an E-Machine. Remember those?
Yep. Earlier today, I was watching our buddy Raya stream, and he was doing his stream on YouTube, and we were talking about old computers, about Gateways and Compacs and E-Machines.
Oh,
and
man. Remember the Presario?
Packard Bell.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, the Packard. See, Packard Bell was if you had a Packard Bell, you were styling.
That was the big one right there.
Yeah, yep. And then we know that, like, the big gaming rigs.
Yeah, and then Alienware was out there for a long time, and then Dell bought Alienware, and that really just ruined that whole brand.
Well, I don't know. You know, so at CES this year, they announced the new M18. I don't know if you've seen this thing. It's an 18-inch laptop made for gamers, and it's got the latest, mobile graphics card in it. I mean, the whole bit. The thing is, the pricing is going to be $2,800, I believe, that's going to be like the...
It's actually not bad. A week ago, 2 weeks ago, I just got done ordering a couple laptops for some graphic designers that we have at my company that we're working for. And they're like, we need it to be like beefy, like top of the line. Ooh. i9 processor, 64 gigs of RAM, mobile AMD video card, all those things. And I think it was about $6,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I found there was an invoice that I had given a customer when I was selling computers, and it was an AMD DX40, and it had, 16 megabytes of RAM.
megabytes?
We weren't into gigabytes then. And maybe a 200 megabyte hard drive, but the price on it was like right around $2,000. For it, and it's just that was back in the 90s, so that was crazy.
Laptops are different though. I mean, you can't really build a laptop. I mean, I think unless you're like some sort of a super genius pro computer builder, you can't buy the parts of a laptop as easy as you can buying parts from a desktop.
Yeah.
So usually with laptops, you just buy them off the shelf, and then if you're into gaming or just geeking out, you build your own computer. Building a PC tower is much easier.
I think Tom's Hardware had a story about Dell developing this Concept Luna, which is basically a snap together laptop. No screws. My thing is you drop it and it turns into Lego. Just goes everywhere.
Right? Yeah.
You'd have to put pieces together. Which brings me to this. So have you ever worked, you've worked on laptops though before. I mean, haven't you?
I mean, basic stuff like replacing RAM or replacing a hard drive or taking out a battery, that's about it.
Used to be really easy.
Used to be.
I don't know what happened to the industry, but they made it harder for us consumers to service our laptops. Mm-hmm. They will say it's all for design, it's all for airflow, it's so you get the maximum bang for the buck. And once you start doing that, you have to seal off the computer to give it better airflow, the whole bit. I just this weekend worked on a Dell 7779 laptop. It's an Inspiron laptop. And I was asked if I could, do the repair. And I have repaired keyboards out of laptops. I've replaced them. I've replaced batteries. And in this one, as soon as I ordered the battery, I said, okay, I'm going to have to get into the case for this. It's not the kind you snap the back and you pull the battery off. There are manufacturers, if you're going to be buying a laptop, there are manufacturers that still make those. So that, you could just interchange the battery. But on this one, oh my Lord, I saw, okay, I'm going to have to open the back of the case to get to the battery. No problem. Inexpensive. It's like maybe, I want to say it was a $30 part. And I was able to do that. And then I thought, oh, his keyboard's going to be different. Now, on some systems, I've got the Asus that I just recently repaired a keyboard on. You can lift off the top, you know, unplug the cable that goes to your keyboard. It's very easy to do. It's a little flip thing there, and you pull it out, and there you go, change the keyboard, you're good to go. On this, I had to take the motherboard out of the laptop, everything out of the laptop, just to get to the keyboard. And then you had these screws. I'm not kidding you, Justin. They were smaller.
Grain of rice.
Yes. And luckily, I bought one of those kits from iFixit. So I had all the Torx. I had everything I needed to get to it. But what a pain in the neck that was. And luckily, got it repaired, got it fixed.
I can feel your pain with that particular story, because I actually had a Dell Inspiron 7737. I still actually have it. It was my old work computer when I was with Tribune Media and I had joined their corporate staff. They were like, hey, pick out a computer. What do you want? And I'm nice. Like, ooh, I want something kind of nice. And so, this was a beefy one. It was like a 17-inch laptop, touchscreen. It had a nice graphics card in it. I mean, I could play games if I wanted to.
Nice.
About 2, maybe 3 years into it, I just got to the point where it just wouldn't even turn on.
Yeah.
And I thought it might be, bad hard drive or whatever. So I bought a solid state and I put that in there and it fired right up and I was able to install Windows. And I thought, oh, that was it. It was just a bad hard drive. Nope. After a day or so, it just would not turn on again. And so then I got in, I had to take the whole thing apart. And yes, I had to have like 7 ramekins out in the with holding all the different screws with little notes on each ramekin to say, this goes to the motherboard, yeah. This goes to the chassis, this goes, because you get so many screws and then you start screwing everything back in and you're left with like 3 screws and you're like, oh, crud. Where do those screws go?
That's normal for me. Yeah.
But I took the whole thing apart and it turns out it's a bad motherboard and it's a known issue with those particular models. And I could have bought another motherboard. I haven't checked for so long, but when I did check about a year and a half ago or so, I could have bought another motherboard on eBay, but it was like $350 just for the motherboard.
Yeah, that's too much.
And I'm like, no, I don't need this. I mean, the computer was massive. I mean, again, 17 inch. It was heavy. It was aluminum case.
Oh,
nice. It was a nice one, but I feel kind of bad that, it just sits in my closet now, but it's just trash. But yeah. It's like 70 screws to get to anything in there.
It is ridiculous how many. Okay, and then I ran into another problem. And I don't know if others have run into this. Apparently, when Dell shipped this laptop, and I would have to assume because my friend who owned this laptop swears she did not enable it. BitLocker was running on it. So as soon as we disconnected the motherboard and the hard drive, BitLocker says, wait a minute, we're not going to run anymore until you put the decoding key. I asked, did you have the key? She didn't have a key. So we went on to her Dell account. We were looking there inside that to see if there's a key somewhere in documents. Nowhere. And at that point, I was like, our options are, because she said, well, couldn't we just reinstall Windows? I said, no, because BitLocker is encrypting all that data that you have. We're not going to access that at all. So it was very strange. Her husband was on another computer and he's not very tech savvy, but we were explaining to him the problem we were having. And I'm scratching my head going, I've never run into this. And he says, well, I found this article and the article says that you can go into the BIOS. I think, okay, I can access the BIOS. You do that before posting, he says, and you can turn on, the mode, and then you can set your TPM. Well, this is a 5-year-old laptop, 6-year-old laptop, so I didn't have TPM, but I remember PTT is kind of the equivalent of that. So I'm thinking, okay, I looked, I couldn't find anything, and I'm following along as he says it. I enabled PTT, and then, set it all, and then applied it, and let the computer reboot. It worked!
Wow.
We were able to bypass it. And then once I got into Windows, turned off BitLocker, but I was able to copy the key. So I'm going to make, I told her, I said, keep this key in case anything ever happens like this again. I was able to bypass that. And, some people have said to me, and they were the same way, what the heck is BitLocker? And it's basically, from what I understand, and again, I had no experience.
The bane of my existence.
Yeah, exactly. It's an encryption device. So it encrypts your data. So nobody can take your hard drive out, put it in another system and try and read it. And that could be bad. That could also be good. But
yeah, well, yeah. It's more of a pain than it is good. I don't like BitLocker. I don't think, as a matter of fact, I don't think I've met anybody that likes BitLocker.
Yeah, especially with this experience. I honestly thought we had gone and lost everything, and I was very apologetic. But luckily, we saved that, and we're able to get in. So if you ever run into that, there is a way to bypass it. I don't know if it'll work on everything, but it worked for us. And then I made sure to turn off BitLocker.
Yep.
I didn't turn it on. Now, you made a purchase recently, and looks like you're having a problem with it. Which surprises the heck out of me, because I actually had thought maybe I should get one. Just if it's good for Justin, it'll be good for me.
Oh, well, it is still good. However, okay, so what we're talking about is that the Pixel Watch, right? I bought the Pixel Watch back in October. I pre-ordered it, right? So I pre-ordered it and I love it. You know, I did mention that, you know, I wish it was a little bit bigger. I don't have the greatest eyesight when it comes to things up close. So sometimes I have a problem reading the watch, but for the most part, you know, it's a great watch. The problem is, what was it, on the 5th of January, 4th of January, the next morning, so the morning of the 5th, I put my watch, I usually wear my watch to bed, but on the morning of the 5th, I get up and I'm getting ready for work and I look down at my watch and the screen is cracked.
What?
Like,
whoa.
All the way across, like it started on the side. Now, if you picture a Pixel watch, it has curved glass. Yeah. So the glass goes all the way around the edges. There's no bezel like on like an Apple Watch or other smartwatches. The glass goes all the way around. It gives it a really cool look. However, it's a design flaw because that curved area is under so much pressure because it already is a curved glass that even just the slightest tap up against something hard will shatter it. Now, the big problem comes in with repair. So I contacted, first off, I started looking it up online, on Reddit threads and things like that, talked about people saying, you know, it's not repairable. Google won't repair it.
Wow.
So I'm like, okay, so let me reach out to Google. So I reached out to Google and I said, hey, you know, got this watch, blah, blah, blah. I said, the screen cracked and they're like, yeah, we apologize. We cannot repair those. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I was like, I don't care if it's, I know it's not under warranty. It's my fault. Just tell me how much it's going to cost and I will send you the watch and you put another bezel on it and send it back to me. No, no big deal.
It's reasonable.
Their response was no. We don't repair those. There is no repairable parts. We do not carry parts to repair and the watch is unrepairable. Just buy yourself another watch. I'm like, hold up. I just spent $400
oh, man.
On a smartwatch and you're just telling me to kick rocks and go buy another watch?
Yeah.
I was not happy at all, right? So, I mean, I'm looking up everywhere. I'm talking, you know, reading people talking about the same thing. Everybody says the same thing. It's a great watch, but it has a design flaw. And if you crack that screen, you are SOL. So what they've been talking about is, so people buy covers, like bezels to go around it, like a snap plastic cover.
That's a good idea.
That goes around the bezel. So here's what I did. I first off contacted American Express because I purchased this with American Express, right?
And not long ago.
Not long ago. Said, hey, do you guys offer this purchase protection? They're like, yes, we offer a 90-day purchase protection. When did you purchase the item? I said, well, I pre-ordered it on the 6th of October. Well, okay, cool. And when did you notice the damage? On the 5th of January. Okay, let me just put that into the calculator here. Hold on 1 second. Ooh, sir, that's 91 days.
Oh, no.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh, man.
I was like, no. I said, actually, I noticed the damage on the 4th.
Yes.
Because it had to have happened on the 4th because I noticed it the morning as soon as I woke up on the 5th. So the damage happened on the 4th. That should put me at 90 days. Plus, I pre-ordered it on the 6th. I didn't receive it until the 13th.
There you go.
So then he's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you're good. But oh my God, talk about being so close to the wire.
Oh, man.
So I get American Express. They're like, yeah, we'll cover it.
What do they do?
Well, they're going to refund the entire purchase price.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's not like a chargeback. It's not like when you report fraud or a chargeback. It's a purchase protection. It's like insurance, right? But I had to fill out I had to fill out this this repair estimate form, right? And mm-hmm. and it says that I need to take this item, because it's a generic repair form. It doesn't matter if it's a watch or a stereo or whatever it is, right? It's just a generic form. And it says that you must take the item to an authorized repair facility and have an authorized repair technician say that it is not repairable. So I'm like, well, wait a second. There is no authorized repair facility. Google themselves. Like, yeah. They won't. So what am I supposed to do? Walk this over and have Sundar sign off on this? Right? For those of you who don't know, that's the CEO of Google.
Yes.
So I called him back and I said, and again, this is like it's a third party company that works with American Express. It's not actually American Express. It's Assurant or something like that.
Assurian.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So I call him back and I said, look, I have no problem getting this thing filled out, but where do I take it? There's no repair facility. And they're like, oh, sir, just take it to an authorized repair. I mean, obviously they're like from India. They're not really listening to what I'm saying. And they're just like, take it to a repair center, take it to an authorized repair center. And I'm like, there is no authorized repair center. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
And Google won't fix it.
And Google won't. And they go, okay, hold on, sir. And they put me on hold and they're like, okay, you know what? Just take it to any watchmaker. Just take them to any watch store. Tell them what the situation is. Have them look at it, sign off. So I took it to our local store right up the road here. This guy's been here around 30 some years repairing all kinds of watches. And I took it in there and I told him the situation. He's like, all right, well, I need a couple hours to look. First off, I was like, hold up, a couple hours? Just sign the piece of paper. Like, you know, but he wanted to look at it and read the fine print, because he wasn't just going to sign his life away, you know, you know. So, no, he looked at it and he did what I asked. He's like, yeah, you can't repair this. There's no parts. You cannot repair it. So he filled out the form and signed it. So I sent it back to Assurian. And now I'm just waiting to see if they'll accept it or not, because if they don't, well, I mean, then there's really not much I can do. I mean, they should. I haven't made any mistakes on it, or I've done everything they've asked. I'm within the time period. So I should. But what I did was I went ahead and I bought another Pixel watch.
So you stuck with Pixel? You didn't go with the Tech Watch or even the iWatch?
I'm not doing Apple. No, first off. And the Galaxy Watch? Nah, not really. No. Yeah. I like the Pixel Watch, but I just don't like that particular design flaw. So what I did is I bought these plastic covers that go around it, the bezel. So the one I'm wearing now is a silver one, because it matches the band. I also bought a magnetic band.
Right.
You really can't obviously see this because this is radio, but it protects the watch. It protects it better than it did. So I'm not so cautious. I mean, I'm still cautious about, you know, making sure I don't hit things on it. But honestly, I didn't even hit it on anything that I can remember.
You were sleeping.
Not even that. Even I wear it on my left wrist.
Right.
And I sleep on the right side. So my left wrist is in the center of the bed. There is nowhere for me to hit it. If I wore it on my right wrist, I might be able to hit it on my end table or something, but
maybe you were snoring kind of loud.
Well, I think what happened was, when I went to go take a shower, I take it off and I dropped it, but I'd only dropped it for about maybe less than a foot. I mean, it was like maybe 6 inches. That could have been enough. It just dropped and hit the sink and that was enough, but I didn't notice that it was messed up until the next morning. So
it's kind of a shame, because if you think about it, when you buy a smartphone, you know, your Pixel, I've got the iPhone 14 Pro Max. If you drop it, there are sometimes you will drop it and it'll be fine. I dropped it where it's landed flat on its face. And I've even got some damage on the case, right? And the phone has been fine. But there are those times where you might drop it. It won't even be that far. And it would just tap the right, and that's it. Your phone's gone.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about with this curved glass that Google has chosen to go with.
I'm wondering, has there been a lot of talk about this? Maybe I don't want to say a class action, but maybe open up Google's eyes that they need to.
There actually is a lot of that class action talk going on right now, because a lot of people are very upset that Google doesn't tell you this, and they only offer you. So you can buy insurance through Google for $4 a month if you're a Google Fi customer, which I am.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy the original watch through Google Fi. I just bought it through the Google Store, and they never offered me the chance to get insurance on it. But I bought this one through Google Fi, and I added the $4 a month insurance on it. So next time this happens, I just have to pay $50 and they'll send me a brand new watch if this does happen again.
Much better.
I don't have to go through the whole process with American Express and all that.
Kinda
I just go straight to Google.
Kind of like Apple Care, how they do that.
Kind of. Yeah, kind of. But there's a lot of people out there that are saying, hey, we're really upset that you did not disclose this information to begin with. And a lot of people are out, you know, $800 after buying two watches, you know.
Now, after all said and done, before, you know, we had this mess up, how are you on the watch? Because I know you've tried was it the Tech Watch is the one you bought on Kickstarter?
Oh, that was a while ago. Tick Watch. Tick Watch, yeah.
And I know you've tried that, and there's many people listening that maybe, you know, Gloria has the iWatch. She got that one. But, I mean, what are your thoughts about it?
Well, I mean, compared to the Tick Watch, it's much faster, much more responsive. I mean, both Tick Watch and the Pixel Watch run native Android Wear. Mm-hmm. Tick Watch was running Android Wear 2, which was definitely an improvement over Android Wear 1, whereas the Pixel Watch now runs Android Wear 3. But even then, I mean, the Tick Watch was good for the price point. It did its job, but it was very laggy. It really took some time to move through the menus, and it wasn't the greatest. But again, for the price point, it was not a bad watch by any means. But the Pixel Watch is much more snappier, much more responsive, and it's got better sensors on it. You know, it tracks your sleep. It can do EKGs. Primarily use this for sleep tracking, and I really like the Fitbit integration with it. The sleep tracking seems to be pretty accurate. I haven't tried doing an EKG or anything like that. But
right.
Yeah, it's a pretty decent watch.
Can you use it without your phone?
I have the LTE model.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's got an eSIM built in. I haven't really tried to use it without the phone. My phone is usually within range of it, Bluetooth. But it does have an eSIM. So I technically can take and make calls, send text messages, do anything I can on my phone. I can do it on the watch without having my phone near me.
And now you can get this in retail now, can't you?
Yes, you can. Yeah. Yep.
All right. So I got a comment from Rick on our Tech Talk Radio Facebook page, which is Tech Talkers. Says when the and it's something you talked about, Justin. So when the pandemic started, my wife was forced to work from home, which she did not mind at all. And it soon became permanent. So I bought a Secret Labs chair when Justin mentioned it. So Secret Labs, are you listening?
Mm-hmm.
All right. There you go. Mentioned it back then for my wife's birthday to replace the Walmart special we had. She still uses it and loves it. Justin is right. All the adjustability and contouring makes all the difference. Price was higher than I ever spent on an office chair, and I ever thought of a gaming chair for general office work until Justin mentioned it. But it reasonably priced over the others out there, not too much different in pricing compared to regular office chairs. Does the job well. Thanks, Justin, for the recommendation.
Awesome. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I love the chair. I really do. Secret Lab makes some great chairs. Funny, you think a Secret Lab is expensive. You try looking up Herman Miller, okay, or Human Scale.
Human Scale? Those
you're talking about $10,000 per chair.
For a chair. It better be massaging me. But with real hands.
Yeah, exactly, right?
All right, we're going to take a break, come back. We'll have more with Tech Talk Radio. Justin, we're going to find a website of the week we could share. But a couple of great guests lined up for you here in the next segment for Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin. Let me find us on the web at techtalkradio.com. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Always great to have friends of the show, and I definitely call him a friend of the show. Over the years, we've had him on quite a few times talking about the different ways to preserve your digital memories. Now, I know a lot of you listening, you do that. You have that box of photos under the bed or in the cabinet or worse, in an attic or in a garage. And those could be lost. You look at the recent the events in California with the flooding or tornadoes. And, you know, we've had these elements that have affected homes or fires. And, you know, we always say the thing we're going to grab first, other than our family members and our pets, is that book full of photos. But they're usually scattered. But the best way to preserve that is to get them digitized. And Mitch Goldstone is the man behind Scan My Photos. Always great to have him on the show. Mitch, thanks for coming on.
Andy, great to be with you. Congratulations, so many years. And man, you covered everything from way back, pre-iPhone, everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've been doing this since 1996. And, you know, it's just so much fun. That's why we do it. It's for fun. But we like to provide the information that our listeners can certainly benefit. And we know that digitizing those memories is something that people have thought about. They always say they're going to get to. Maybe they've had a scanner. They thought they could do it. They scan a couple of photos and then they get tired. You have a process that captures the best way to not only do the memories we have from, you know, those photos, but film, old video, so that it's always preserved.
Absolutely. And we now do slide carousel scanning too. That was, you know, it's all about listening to customers. We've been doing it since 1990, and scanmyphotos.com has preserved 1 billion photos now. But one of the challenges is people have those old Kodak slide carousels.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this new service. It's $40. You send in your entire slide carousel. It's digitized and then sent back. Same day scanning and all is available. But on the movie side, I have this new equipment which actually digitizes each frame, each image. And that's really important for why people are doing this now, for all the photo sharing apps, whether it's Instagram or TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, all of them. So they can actually freeze frame an image. It's super clear and sharp as well.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Super 8 film, I think, was 18 frames per second.
Wow, you know your stuff. Yeah, yeah.
It's been a while. So, I mean, if you're taking, you can also, you're also in that process, you're making sure that somebody is getting the best quality out of that film. You know, depending on the quality of film, they're really going to get the best quality in that digital transfer.
It's really important. But, you know, what's kind of interesting, Andy, is we started out with, on the photo side, it was professional 600 DPI high resolution. And over the years, people started to say they didn't even need that high. They needed just 300, mm-hmm. 150, and even 72 DPI just to have all the images archived, just to upload to social media. So they didn't need these giant files. So we do all the different services for them.
You know, Mish, I've talked to users and people that have been in this dilemma that have always asked me, and I always tell them, scan my photos. The questions they have had have always been, what if I don't want to share this on Instagram? Maybe, you know, we have some older listeners here in Green Valley that aren't on Instagram or aren't on Facebook. And I'm like, you don't have to. The nice thing about this is you have options other than social media to do it. You can, you know, texting, email, or even put them in a Dropbox or a, you know, or a Google Drive and give people access to it. That way, you know, we do this with our kids because our kids are in California, they're in Phoenix. This way, when we have photos, we can put them and share them, and then people can, we can, you know, my kids can grab them, save them, have them, but they're always there. So they're preserved so that if something happens and we lose our digital device or we lose those photos, this way they're safe. We know that they have access to them.
Over the years, we've become content providers for all the photo sharing apps because the challenge is for a lot of your listeners also is people are just uploading and sharing recent pictures from their smartphones. And if they're kind of like me, it's mostly the food you ate last night, but not those decades past pictures, home movies, slides. And it's really different to share the old stuff. We do a lot of celebrity work too. And one of our customers, Matt Asner's dad, Ed Asner, which everyone knows, passed away.
Yeah.
And he had us digitize everything that Mr. Asner had. And it was extraordinary. And then his son was posting it on social media. Just the comments. People haven't seen those pictures of him from Lou Grant and Mary Tyler Moore and way back also.
Yeah, I think I saw one of those pictures. I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about it, but I think I remember seeing the picture of young Ed Asner, and I'm like, he's a handsome young man. I mean, really.
He was, and I didn't know. He went all the way back to the 1950s, and he was very active politically as well. And
yeah.
You know, when you take pictures of friends, they're friends. But, you know, the pictures he had, you know, with all the celebrities. Now, I need a big caveat. But the reason we have all these celebrity clients is because their photo privacy is our priority. But Matt, you know, shared them all online. So that was that was okay.
I think that's good. But it also says that, listen, you're one of the best companies out there that does this. And the process is really well done. How does this work, Mitch, when somebody's listening right now, maybe, well, I've got about 40 loose photos. And I mean, I'm thinking about like my family. We have photos from Burma with my grandfather, who was a surgeon there in Burma, with the governor at the time, back in the 50s. You know, how would I take those, get those to you for them to be digitized? What's the process?
Sure. It's actually, we really simplified everything. And people that go to the new website, it's so easy. You just choose whatever you want, whether it's photos, we send you a box, you fill it up with about 2,000 photos, shipping's included, we digitize it. If you choose same day, it's done same day, high resolution, all of that. And plus the other services, I mentioned the slide carousel scanning and all the others. It's so simple. We wanted to make it really easy. So even though we have live support, it's not used much because everything is so easy to understand.
Now, in the case, Mitch, and we've had this happen, we know that somebody passes and then family members want to gather the photos for a wake video or to be displayed there. Do you have a turnaround time that would allow that if something is scheduled out a week, say maybe 2 weeks from that date of them gathering all the photos?
Andy, I'm smiling. Well, sadly, it's actually same day. And unfortunately, during the pandemic, that's where we came up with a new service called Express ScanFast, where it's same day. I didn't even know people needed it because people had all this content for decades. Mm-hmm. But there were so many memorial services that were online and people needed everything immediately for the next day. So that's why we created the ScanFast for same day scanning. And it's so emotional. And fortunately, that part with memorial services has slowed down. But, you know, Andy, this crazy weather we're having around the country now with floods, but also wildfires, hurricanes. And unfortunately, that's when we hear from people after the fact, after the water or smoke damage. And that's why it's such a priority to make sure these boxes of photos and slides and film negatives, if they're in a basement or a place where there's mildew and all, it's not good for it. And, you know, one of the worst things people aren't aware of, remember the VHS cassettes, Blockbuster Video?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? Well, so all of that content, unfortunately, is on magnetic media, and it actually disintegrates and fades away as the magnetic material degrades. So it's tough to archive those as you can with motion picture film and all of that.
Oh, you think about all the different memories that have been captured on VHS, baseball games, weddings, all kinds of events that should definitely be preserved. The preservation process, you go through it, you get this really great image. How is it delivered to the customer? I mean, we've had, you know, obviously CD-ROMs, DVD drives to do it, but, you know, some people don't even have those anymore in their computer. Would they have to go out and get one, or do you deliver it in a different kind of method?
We do, and it was kind of funny. Consumer Reports just did a profile on us, and they sent their order, and I was digitized right away and sent back. But we have three options. There's a DVD data disk, a 8-gigabyte thumb drive, and the one most people choose today is just instant upload. So as soon as anything is digitized, that day, if you choose express scanning, you get a message, click, and you see all the images, high resolution right there.
Oh, that's great. That is great. I love that.
They're all standard JPEG files, so they could be used for any format. But, you know, it's not just getting it back to them. It's what's next, because, Andy, I hear so many stories. You scanned my photos 5 years ago, 10 years ago, there was a fire, whatever, I lost them all. Do you still have them? And we do archive for customers if they add that service now. But the problem is, if we send you back a flash drive and it's on your computer and something happens to your house, it's so important to back it up. You know, they're not locked or anything. They're just standard JPEG files. So really important to save copies, upload to Google Photos, the cloud, Dropbox, make copies, give to relatives, make sure they're off-site, safety deposit box, all of that. Make lots and lots of copies.
I tell you, it was really funny. We're doing a big reunion in Palm Springs for the station I worked at next month, and people have been uploading photos, and I saw a photo. I'm like, I've never seen this photo before. I'm in it. I had a mullet. I'm like, maybe I don't want to see that picture. But it's scanmyphotos.com is the website. Now, one thing I know, Mitch, is you were at CES this year. You got a chance to check out some things. One of those that really intrigued me was the U.S. Postal Service at CES this year.
Indeed. I spent about an hour at their booth. I'm probably their biggest fan. I had went to their public affairs people in Washington, D.C., a while ago, and explains that they built our business, and I'm so grateful. And apparently, I'm the only person that ever contacted them and said that. They sent out a 12-person production crew, created a commercial. It's on the homepage on the website that people trust the U.S. Postal Service with delivering their most precious possession. And each year, they have a very large booth exhibit at CES. And this year, they're doing something kind of cool where you can actually put your own photos onto postage stamps.
Oh, about time and amazing. I'm glad.
It is. And they need to be really innovative with new products like that. I mean, that's something that's really cool that a lot of people will embrace. I know the lines at their exhibit were quite large. While there, a lot of people at CES were asking, like, why is the post office there? They're not a tech company, but they are. They're the delivery mechanism for all the exhibitors, e-commerce, everything. So, yeah, it was really smart, and CES was back up. I've been going since 1990.
Yep.
I have a quick story. A couple of years ago, I met this guy. His name was Nick. He was at a small, tiny 10-foot booth in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And I said to him, Nick, this is the coolest, greatest product I've seen at CES. And he was a little dumbfounded and surprised. And he said, thanks, but you're like the only one to say that.
Wow.
And I explained, nope, every camera manufacturer needs to license this. This is huge. And it turned out I ran into him about 3 years ago, and I reminded him, and he said, yes, I remember you. His name is Nick. The company he started with $40,000 investment from his parents was GoPro.
Oh, wow.
And they paid $40,000 for him to be there. No one knew who he was. Naturally, when I was at this huge exhibit a few years ago, it was much larger. And, yeah, he remembered that whole experience, and no one was taking him seriously. And that's why it's so important at CES to go away from the Samsung's LG booths, all of that, and see the new cool things.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I want our listeners to check it out. Also, you put a lot of videos up on social media on your Twitter account, which I think people should check out for Scan My Photos from your coverage of CES. Some of the best that I've seen, I'll be honest with you. And I love the videos. So definitely take a look at that. But contact Mitch, contact scanmyphotos.com to get those memories digitized. Don't wait. Don't wait till it's too late. Get them done. Get them preserved. Mitch, thank you so much for coming on Tech Talk Radio again.
Andy, my pleasure. You're terrific. Appreciate it.
The website address again is scanmyphotos.com. We'll have a link on our website as well with a special offer just for listeners. So check out techtalkradio.com. You can also share the individual page for the interview. So if you've had friends that want to get stuff digitized, definitely want them to know about scanmyphotos.com. We'll be back with more of Tech Talk Radio. You want to know what's going on with AR, virtual reality? A great guest standing by to tell us all about it. You can find us on the web, techtalkradio.com.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
One of the things that we heard a lot about during CES was the idea of AR and VR going to be coming even bigger in the years ahead. And we've seen companies like Microsoft, Facebook, and Google taking a crack at the technology, but a lot of us maybe don't understand the technology. Well, one of the companies that does is GridRaster. And with us is Dejam Panagrahi, who is with us on the line, one of the co-founders for GridRaster. Thank you so much for coming on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks for the opportunity.
Now, tell us a little bit, maybe a quick explanation of what AR and VR are for and how can it serve the corporate environment? How can businesses use this to really reach out to its customer base, whether in industry or even consumers?
Sure. So we have like many terms that is flying around, but yeah, augmented reality and virtual reality are the two key ones which is going on. So one of the good way to differentiate is virtual reality is an experience where you are completely taken away from your real world and put in a completely different virtual world. So, and AR is something where you are able to kind of experience some of the virtual experiences, but staying still connected with the world around you. For example, if people have seen the Pokemon Go, it's a pretty early example of AR. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. And, you know, we think of, we hear virtual reality, you know, people have gone and got the Meta, you know, glasses or the headsets they wear, and people have a lot of fun with that. But the idea of turning it into money-making is still, people are still trying to figure out how that's going to be done. And now with Apple apparently moving into this sector, could this be a good move? Do they have the kind of tech chutzpah to make this happen?
Oh, tell me about it. Like, I think the entire industry have been waiting for, Apple to kind of release the headset. I mean, it was the worst kept secret that they're working on a AR a glass, which, of course, their vision is a little different from how Meta and others are kind of approaching. They primarily see the entire experience to be AR and VR, one of the mode within those experience. And we are all kind of waiting eagerly for the actual release. But no, the entire industry is excited, actually.
Well, with that excitement, though, you have to look at Meta's, you know, kind of what they've been trying to do with VR. And it's actually cost them quite a bit to do all the developing at it. Do you think there'll be some point for them, for Meta, where we'll see maybe it catching up and like more people jumping onto this type of technology?
So, yeah, I mean, I think there's a good reason why Meta had to sink in a lot of money to reach where they are. Frankly, I mean, one of the key things we need to realize is Meta has never been a hardware manufacturing kind of a company, right? Mm-hmm. And they had to kind of build their initial capabilities when you're trying to develop a headset over a time period. But when you come to Apple, I mean, they are the best at it. And in fact, in many ways, they are uniquely positioned to kind of solve some of the difficult problems that are there on for a truly immersive experience, just because of how tightly each of the components is kind of integrated, right? Whether you take the case of the processors in itself, the camera, the sensing technology, they have the audio, which they already have the AirPods. I mean, the entire spectrum, they have something or the other which was kind of going on, part of the either the Mac or the iPad or all of that. They need to kind of bring it all together and then solves some very specific problems from an immersive point of view. But yeah, they are not starting blank, and I can completely understand why Meta has to sink in a lot of money before they get to somewhere meaningful.
Now, we know that GridRaster, the company you co-founded, does solutions for enterprises. How will we see AR kind of changing in the years ahead, and how can it apply to, large corporations and enterprises? Will they be using this for a construction of products, development of products, making it easier to kind of see a vision for something that could be created?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only they are just beginning to use it, like they're in many of the customers that we are working today, particularly in the industrial enterprises, like whether you talk about the aerospace and defense industry, you talk about the automotive industry, all of them are already kind of using AR in a pretty good way and beginning to realize the immense value that it provides, right? If you can tracking it closely, like you recently, in fact, a large company like Boeing announced you know, the entire journey of the design of the aircraft would happen actually in the metaverse, which is basically another term for the augmented reality and virtual reality experiences. Then you have, Hitachi kind of take that same path on, and then you have BMW on the automotive side take that same path. And more of these companies are doing that, and for very, very good reasons. And the way they're trying everything up is they're going to take this journey through the design phase, mm-hmm. to the manufacturing assembly phase, to the after sales maintenance services, plus, you know, kind of providing their customers an experience where they can customize themselves and take decisions quickly and with much more confidence that, okay, this is what their end product will look like. The next best thing to having it physically there is to actually see it in VR or AR, and that's what they're doing.
Now, is the big challenge, Dijon, going to be processing? I mean, we think about it, data. It has to be processed. We know Intel has just recently released some numbers of where they're up to when it comes to the processing power of some of their, you know, their infrastructure. But is that going to be the big challenge, or are we there where we need to be?
No, you are spot on. I think this is one of the biggest shifts that you're going to see is all these experiences actually requires a very low latency to have a good experience, right? Mm-hmm. And all that interaction has to happen real time, which means all this task we're talking of, the rendering, the visuals, high fidelity visuals, which makes you feel that it's, you know, indistinguishable from the real world, or you're trying to kind of capture all the 3D data in the environment that you are seeing, there's like a huge amount of, you know, data that is coming in. It's like maybe like 20, 30 fold of what we are seeing today.
Wow.
Right? And and it's only going to go grow. It's only going to get more and more. Like we wouldn't be surprised that we actually hit 100 times the data that we are seeing today. For that, not only the devices are unprepared, and that is a good reason why you see all these headsets are so clunky, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes.
And it's difficult to wear, right? And so there's a lot of ways it's been kind of addressed, and as a company, Grid Raster, we are trying to solve some of those issues which can make this headset like just like wearing a shade or like a spectacle, and you get the compute from somewhere else. And in this case, it would be the cloud. And the cloud, not the cloud that we know of today, but the cloud of the future would look different. You almost would have computing power sitting around you where you wouldn't even realize.
You know, Dijon, I'm thinking about how far we have come with technology from the first PCs to, you know, where we are today. We've come quite a far away in a short amount of time. Do you think this is something we may see develop more in the next 10 years, or are we looking 20 or 30 years down the line?
No, we are already beginning to live it, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it's just that, that all the technology has a way to kind of come into the real world. And we believe that augmented reality and virtual reality as a technology, most of us are going to get introduced through our work.
Yeah.
And it's already happening in many places. And just to tell you, like, for example, today, Walmart, pretty much like everybody who joins Walmart today has to go through the training to the VR environment. Everyone.
Wow. Think of
the biggest retailer in the world.
What a great idea. So you could do your training in store, but there while you're sitting learning, so you're not in the way of customers, you're actually learning through virtual reality.
Absolutely. And you can create scenarios which you may not want to create that in the real world, but you can create that in the virtual environment and actually train people how to react to those scenarios. You know, what are the better ways to do it? So, you know, it's going to be pretty defining. And we are already seeing it. And there is a good reason why Walmart kind of mandated, right?
Do you think maybe the entertainment industry as well, Dijon, will look at this and say, we can make full movies that instead of, and I like the theater experience, but instead of you would just put on the glasses and they could create a movie, you would watch there in your glasses.
No, absolutely. That's again, one of the key use cases that I think Apple had been looking at, is that, you know, the realistic video conferencing and streaming. The idea here is even if we are apart, we can potentially be able to see a movie experience or even a sporting life, sporting event, almost like we are sitting together and interact as if you are your friends or you are around a certain experience. So, no, that's definitely entertainment is going to be the big. And the fact is, a lot of this VR development, all the beachhead has been the gaming industry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And they have pushed the boundaries, and there is this, you know, ardent of, you know, followers, you know, who kind of put, willing to kind of put the money, which is kind of necessary for kind of pushing these boundaries. And I think now the other industries are beginning to reap those benefits.
I am so excited about where we're going with this. GridRaster, definitely the company to reach out to, offering these solutions for enterprises. I'm thinking home builders. Governments could definitely reach out to find out, you know, ways to help design the city, make the city flow a little better. They could all do this with AR, VR. How would they reach out to you, Dijon?
So they can reach out to us through our website. I think that's gridraster.com. So
yep.
That's the easiest way, I guess, for anybody to remember.
Yes. Well, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again. We'll see where we're at the next year. Hopefully Apple, if they announce this, it'll be this year with development, maybe later towards the end of the year. And we'll see where they go with it. It would be good and would be great to talk to you again and get your thoughts.
No, absolutely. Pleasure is all mine. Like we are absolutely excited about the potentials, and that's the reason we had to leave all this amazing job and be working as in a startup for the last 7 years. No.
Wow.
We're going to see a lot over the next 2 years. I can assure you. It's not only about the devices, actually, it's the entire infrastructure behind it, right? That's kind of developing and the 5G coming in. We are up for some amazing times.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much for coming on Tech Talk Radio. We'll take another break and come back. Justin will get a chance to take a little quiz to see what he knows about tech. And we'll give you a website link that you can check out as well, all with Tech Talk Radio. Make sure you tell a friend about the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Tech Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Are you, you know, we haven't done the quiz on the show where, you know, we ask each other questions and try and stump each other. We had, 30-second tech and tech terms, the whole bit. But I'm playing this new game. It's a trivia game. I've been playing apps lately. I got into Royal Match, which is just basically Toon Blast with different characters, which is fun. I tried to start up Clash of Clans again, but it just didn't have that same feeling.
Yeah, it really didn't.
All right, so Trivia Blast had a section on technology. So I thought we would try Justin and see how well he does. All right? I just realized they didn't save the answers, but this is how this, and people were failing this one. To get back to the default page of your web browser, which button do you press? Refresh, space, home, or stop?
Home.
Yes, you got that. What is a, this is how easy the questions are. What is a portable computer called? Is it A, RAM, B, bookstop, C, USB, or D, laptop?
D, laptop.
All right.
You know, for the next one, don't even give me the options. Just tell me the question, see if I can get it.
Okay. What California-based search engine company bought YouTube for $1.6 million?
Google.
Yes. All right. And the final one, because you have to get 5 correct. I got this one wrong. But only because
Don't tell me the options. Just tell me the question.
Only because of my big fat thumbs. What device converts text and images into digital format to store on a computer?
Okay. So what device converts
text and images into a digital format to store on a computer?
A scanner?
And scanner was correct. I accidentally selected Adobe.
Oh, accidentally. Yes, of course.
Big
accidentally.
All right, you got a website of the week for us?
Yeah, no, I was messing around. I found this is really cool. It's been out for a while. It used to be called the Google Earth Clock, but I guess, you know, some other company bought it or whatever. However, so the website is earthclock.cw. And T, so CWANDT.com, right. earthclock.CWANDT.com. What it does is it uses pictures from Google Earth that represent the numbers of a clock, of a digital clock.
Right.
And it will keep rotating these pictures every time the time changes. So
oh,
like
that's cool.
So you go check it out. It's pretty cool. So it just finds like buildings or rivers that are formed in various shapes of different numbers, and it just shows you these images, and that is literally your clock.
Ooh,
on your screen.
All right, what's that website address again?
One more time. It's earthclock.cwandt. So cwandt.com.
All right. Very good website of the week. We'll put it up on our website as well. In the meantime, hopefully Sean will be able to be with us next week. We'll get that all put together. And I know you got some more stuff next week you want to talk about, including a brand new vinyl record player.
Oh, yeah. Finally got back into that.
We'll give you the skinny on that as well. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Justin Lemmy. Have yourselves a great week and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/tech talkers.
Have a question for the show? Hit it up on Facebook or drop us an email, techguys@techtalkradio.com. Take care.